this week's edition of KUAR Public Radio's Week in Review podcast. I'm Jacob Kaufman.
I'm Sarah Weitz-Kotacek.
I'm Chris Hickey.
And I'm Michael Heppelin.
Refugees fleeing war-torn Syria are being put on hold. Arkansas's elected officials are weary of threats.
Governor Asa Hutchinson defends his decision to oppose relocating Syrian refugees in Arkansas.
Lawmakers start talk of tackling problems in the state's foster care system.
The governor's highway group gets closer to new funding ideas.
This is the news from the week that was 11/15 to 11/21, 2015. Governor Asa Hutchinson says he does not want any Arkansas facilities being used for refugees from Syria and from Iraq. Michael Heppelin was there for a phone call that the governor actually made while he was in Japan about this matter. Here's a little bit from news director Michael Heppelin, a segment he recorded earlier this week specifically for this podcast.
Well, Jacob, the governor started on Monday by releasing a statement while he was in the middle of an international trade mission expressing his opposition to any Syrian refugees being brought to Arkansas. Then on Tuesday, he had a conference call with reporters at the Capitol by phone from Japan, and I was there as he took questions about his opposition to locating Syrian refugees here. The governor, one of about several dozen governors, all Republicans from around the country, who argue that there's not enough vetting process before these refugees come into the country, and cited the terrorist attacks in France as an example of how it's believed in that case at least one of the terrorists came in among Syrian refugees, and expressing his opposition. And he came at this from partly the angle of having served under President George W. Bush as one of the top Homeland Security officials. He was sent to Saudi Arabia after the 9/11 attacks to set up a security center there, and said based on his experience, it just doesn't seem that this would be safe. Though he did acknowledge, and we'll play a little bit of his conference call here, that there are no plans at this point to bring Syrians into Arkansas, but still has expressed his opposition to the White House.
Until we have confidence that the security of the United States will be protected, then we should not be allowing a mass relocation of Syrian refugees into the United States. And as governor, I understand this is a federal policy, but it is important to express a governor's viewpoint. It's important to express opposition to a federal policy that could potentially endanger our citizens. And the second reason I made the statement as I did was that I wanted to calm and assure people that we are looking into this and expressing our view, and that there's not any current plans for a relocation center in Arkansas. The rumors were abundant that there's going to be our state targeted for a relocation center or for a significant number of Syrian refugees. And I wanted to assure people that that is not the case.
The governor noted that in the past, Arkansas has served as a place for housing refugees at many different times in our history, including people from Vietnam during the Vietnam War. Also, Cubans were brought to Arkansas in 1980. And he pointed out that in that big exodus from Cuba, Fidel Castro, unknowing to many at the time, but we later learned, also opened up his prisons, that a lot of the people who were sent over from Cuba were dangerous people who had been sent to prison, who he decided to unleash on the U.S. Many had mental issues and were very dangerous people. Governor Hutchinson also said he has asked the Department of Human Services to resist any efforts to move any of these refugees to Arkansas, saying there just isn't a proper or adequate way to vet the safety, the background of these Syrians, and just as he said there, wants to reiterate that None are being considered to be brought to Arkansas at this point. But this obviously has become a big national issue. Presidential candidates have also been weighing on this. One thing, there has been the suggestion from some that maybe Christians from Syria should be allowed to be brought to the U.S. Governor Hutchinson was asked point blank about that. He said that no, he would not make a difference based on religion, that pretty much he feels like any Syrians, the refugees, none should be allowed to come into the U.S. and in particular here in Arkansas.
And also in the U.S. House this week, Arkansas's congressional delegation had some action to kind of back up their governor in some ways. They voted for the SAFE Act overwhelmingly. Almost every single Republican, a handful of Democrats joined in as well. And I got a chance to speak with Central Arkansas's Congressman French Hill about it. And basically, this new SAFE Act, it has the existing vetting process and puts on top of it, it requires the FBI, Homeland Security, and the National Intelligence Agency, the directors of each of those agencies, to personally certify and sign onto every single application for a refugee saying these people are safe to be admitted to the country. The process already takes over a year, 18 to 24 months on average, for a refugee to come to the United States as it is. But French Hill thinks it's reasonable to ask these directors of each agency to personally oversee these things.
The State Department and the Border Security agents do that now on an individual, customized basis. They do personal interviews, they do biometric screenings, and so they would get that information from the Department of State, review it, verify it in batches, and certify it. In my view, I don't think it will add a meaningful amount of time to the vetting process that we have now, but it does give people more comfort that the top echelons of our national security apparatus have in mind that any potential of a national security threat from someone who comes seeking asylum would have that extra stamp of approval.
In addition, while the heads of these agencies are figuring out exactly how they're going to have the certification process that could lead to a temporary stop in admitting refugees right now, last month the U.S. only took less than 200 refugees from Syria, so there's not an overwhelming amount of refugees coming in the system previously at this slow pace where it takes over a year, but the president has called for around 10,000 to come in over the next several years. French Hill, though, while he believes there needs to be more vetting in place, he does not embrace the anti-Islam rhetoric that we've seen from State Senator Jason Rayford, Ted Cruz as well, and also Donald Trump have all called for perhaps banning Muslim immigration or Muslim refugees, period, at this point in time.
Well, I think America has a traditioning of welcoming people for all faiths. Our country was founded on freedom of religion, and that was one of the great attractions to colonial America, was the ability to express one's religious freely, and it's enshrined in our Constitution. So I don't believe that we should have a test per se of religious feelings one way or the other.
So this bill passed by the House will now go on to the U.S. Senate. I got a chance to speak with Senator John Bozeman today. Hopefully we'll talk about that a little bit next week, and we'll see what action the Senate takes. The president said he'd veto this measure, and U.S. Senate Democrat leaders have said they plan to try to block this bill.
Jacob or Chris, Arkansas has a history of housing refugees at Fort Chaffee, a difficult one. I understand that there was some backlash against Cuban refugees who were here in the 70s, and that impacted Bill Clinton's campaign for governor. Understand that Governor Hutchinson mentioned that history as part of his justification. How does that come into play?
Well, I can say that, yeah, you're right in that Arkansas does have a history of admitting refugees. It started in 1975 when, at the end of the Vietnam War, when Governor Pryor was in office, and we accepted nearly 25,000, I believe, refugees over the course, the end of that war until December of that year, housing them at Fort Chaffee. And
well, Chris, there's been one Syrian refugee that we know of in the state based in Springdale, or at least the Springdale-based charity, Arkansas Catholic Charities, is the one that facilitated him coming here. Do we have any idea about the costs and what it takes to bring a refugee to Arkansas and whether or not that charity would be likely to try to do so, given that there's not an existing community of Syrians here?
Yeah, I spoke with the head of the Immigration Services a couple months ago, Frank Head from Springdale Charities, Catholic Charities in Springdale, and he was talking a little bit about the process. First of all, there has to be, or they usually relocate refugees if they have existing family members already based here. And in the case of Arkansas, there aren't too many Syrian families who have relatives who are seeking asylum here through the State Department process. And he said it's a really Byzantine process. When a refugee makes an application, it's like a two-year process. They have to fill out all these forms, go through all these vetting checks already. And yeah, like you were saying, there was one, the Democrat Gazette had an article about that earlier this week. He was a journalist, I believe. He lived, who had fled the government there and lived here for a brief time, but has since moved. But right now, there are no Syrian refugees. I think that Springdale Charity had said that they have mostly assisted Burmese refugees. They assisted about 10 to 20 Burmese over the last couple of years.
And I guess Arkansas is one of the least likely states to welcome refugees anywhere in the country, ranked maybe second to last, I read somewhere.
Yeah, and I think that might just be because organization, there's only one organization that that Catholic Charities office in Springdale that's approved by the State Department to do that, whereas other states probably have, you know, a handful or a dozen different offices around their state.
Although Arkansas's governor and representatives are certainly not alone in trying to have at least a temporary pause in taking refugees, Arkansas is not an outlier in that regard.
Well, it sounds like the governors don't have a legal authority to keep refugees out of their states. Interesting to learn that the suspected mastermind of the Paris bombings was not a refugee and that authorities thought he was in Syria. So I guess in this case, the issue with him was not that he was a known person who hadn't been thoroughly vetted, but that they didn't know he was there at all.
We've been hearing for a number of months, it seems for about half a year, a year now, about the state's constant struggle to give foster kids some sort of home life. Sarah, you were at a meeting where DHS officials, Cecile Blucher, updated lawmakers. The problem seems to have grown, if anything.
That's right. The governor requested a review of the DHS system following the rehoming scandal with Justin Harris and various other reports, a lot of them from the Arkansas Times, about the system and how poorly it was serving kids, failures to investigate child deaths stemming from abuse in the foster care system homes. So what has come to light in recent months is that there's a dire shortage of homes for the state's more than 4,000 foster kids. Some of them were reportedly sleeping in DHS offices, and there's a serious shortage of foster families willing to step up, among other issues that were identified in this report. So lawmakers are starting to hear from DHS officials in advance of the fiscal session starting in the spring. Cecile Blucher and her staff that spoke really emphasized the high turnover rate among caseworkers and the difficulty recruiting staff given the amount of work they're expected to do. A lot of them have to travel around the state to access their foster kids in homes wherever they're placed, and they end up working overtime on a regular basis. There's a 50% turnover among caseworkers, so often caseworkers, supervisors are new, and it just creates a lot of complications trying to stabilize situations with families. So here's what she said in the hearing.
And so one of the things that you see that you don't see or that we're not capturing in the caseload is the distance that staff have to travel to get those kids to and from court, those cases in which judges are wanting, you know, the 2 and 3 visits a week to Representative Meek's point. It is about the children. It is about what's in their best interest. It is important that those children have visits. But yet at the same time, the flip of that is the burden that that causes for those workers and the PAs in doing those transportations. And so that's a big issue. The recruitment of foster parents, not only do we have trouble recruiting staff to the child welfare system, there are problems in getting people to want to become foster parents, or the people that are quality foster parents who understand what fostering means, and getting those people to come forward.
And the other information that came out of this was that it seems a nearly a fifth more foster kids in the system than there were just this summer when the report was released. So really steadily rising numbers for whatever reason.
Can you tell me where we are on the governor's recommendations? He had that report commissioned. He had some recommendations come out of it. Some of the money and programs will have to wait for the legislative session, whether that's the fiscal session or in 2017. But there was some immediate allocation, it seemed like. Where are we on the governor's recommendations? And he said he was going to try to fix this.
There have been committees formed in the legislature to address this, and they're just now starting to talk about what they want to do and what kind of money they want to ask for. So they're going through the recommendations of the report. It sounds like the DHS officials really chose to get on message with the need for more caseworkers, which was just one of the recommendations. The governors brought together faith leaders to talk about, you know, finding new homes, but that seems like a cost-free response.
And they haven't stepped up at this point to meet the demand anyway. It's a growing demand.
Yes. I mean, obviously the demand is so vast that that process sounds like a, you know, long-term approach to getting help, but I don't know how the faith workers in the state could even address those thousands of kids needing homes in such a short time span. But it seems that not much has been done yet. Lawmakers are just learning about the problem, and hopefully the governor does intend to address those recommendations he accepted.
All right, Chris, we've been talking about plans in Little Rock to build more highways for a number of weeks now, but in the legislature, in the governor's office, there's plans about how are we going to fund these type of projects. The governor's highway commission that he formed to try to find some new funding solutions, they're almost done meeting. They're almost ready to have some final recommendations that should come out next month.
Yeah, right. Their recommendations are supposed to be submitted by mid-December. The governor called this group to meet back in April to deal with sort of lagging revenue just based on consumption taxes from fuel bought by consumers who drive, and also from sort of this instability with the Federal Highway Trust Fund that we hear about from Congress. So that has created some uncertainty as far as funding highway projects in the state. So this group has been meeting since December. It's about 15 or 20 stakeholders, legislators, highway officials, other industry representatives. And they just kind of, they're just about to ready to polish off their recommendations. And they proposed four things. Three of them essentially have to do with raising fuel taxes.
The gas tax is one. Frank Scott in a report you did earlier this week, the highway commissioner suggested taxing people based on how many miles they report driving was another.
Yeah, yeah. And that his idea is based on one that was instituted in Oregon. He said reportable miles traveled, it would be something that a driver would have to fill out when they go to renew their tags every year. And it would be kind of based on the honor system. And here he is talking about that a little bit.
Essentially, when you have a world where we're moving more to efficient vehicles, we can't always be solely relying upon on the way we're currently doing it. So if you do a vehicle miles travel or reportable miles travel, it takes away any of the privacy issues of a vehicle miles travel program. This way, it's more of an honor system. Now, how much that money would garner, we don't know. And so once you get DFNA to actually look into that situation, we'll figure out, is it feasible? Is it cost efficient? Is it cost effective for their entire system?
And he was referring there to the vehicle miles traveled in Oregon. They had like put a device on the car and it would track the number of miles traveled over the given year. And there are some privacy issues with that, as he said. So his idea is to base it on the number of miles one reports. And he says that would create enough revenue to last for generations. And he also mentioned, you know, there's an issue with declining consumption based on the efficiency of vehicles, so that's one of the leading factors into why fuel tax revenue has been going down, is because people are driving more efficient vehicles, they spend less on gas, basically.
And how feasible do these tax-generating proposals seem to be? It seems like the governor said from the onset, no new taxes for highways. If you're going to do it, we're going to be revenue neutral, which is kind of a complicated way of saying we're going to take money from somewhere else in the budget for the first time in Arkansas from general revenue to pay for highways.
The governor, after the latest draft of the proposals came out, issued a statement basically saying that he disagrees with three of them that would require a raise in taxes. The quote-unquote revenue neutral proposal would basically shift around revenues from that normally go to state agencies, certain state agencies, from sales taxes, and shift them more towards highways. There's also part of that is shifting some money that's coming from a sales tax that's now going toward paying desegregation aid to the three Pulaski County school districts that have been under where the state has been under a court order to pay tens of millions of dollars a year to three Pulaski County school districts. That is set to end, I think, in 2017. That tax was supposed to be phased out after that those payments ended, but one of the proposals would shift that revenue back towards highways. That's essentially it. I mean, it seems like the ideas to raise fuel taxes is pretty politically unpalatable for most people.
We don't have the final recommendations yet, but three out of the four may be dead on arrival, it seems like, even though there's a consensus within the highway building community.
Yeah, and they tend to emphasize that these are just ideas. These are just options. You know, the governor can take what he will from them and create a legislative agenda, potentially. Duncan Baird, his budget director, who's also the chairman of this working group, commented on that.
The packages are really just suggestions for how you could put some of the individual components together if you so choose to put a package together. But as some of the discussion today kind of indicated, on any of those you could really pick one item out and do it individually. You could take an item and tweak it. More than anything, we just wanted to lay the groundwork for some of the individual mechanisms you could use, or some of the ways that you could package those individual mechanisms together.
Ongoing discussion about the plans to improve or expand the I-30 corridor through downtown Little Rock and North Little Rock. The city board of directors for Little Rock voted this week to suspend voting on a resolution asking the highway department to continue looking at that. And an interesting thing that came out of that is Little Rock Mayor Mark Stodola made a statement that he'd like to see the city hire an urban planner because of this discussion. This is something that was called for recently by this local design collective, Studio Maine, kind of within the discussion of planning that I-30 corridor in the interchange downtown. There was no person or expert specifically on the task of looking at how this piece of infrastructure interacts with city space.
This has been KUAR's Week in Review podcast. We're broadcasting from the University of Arkansas at Little Rock, though we are editorially independent. I'm Jacob Kaufman.
I'm Sarah Weitz Kotacek.
I'm Chris Hickey.
And I'm Michael Heppelman.
Thanks for listening. And you can subscribe to our podcast where you subscribe to all podcasts, or visit us at KUAR.org.